2-2 pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
All right. Welcome back to another episode of the 90th Percentile Podcast. It's your host, Jeff Ponce. Alongside me, as always, is my co-host, Matt Pajak. We're talking velocity today because not enough people have talked about it yet. So we felt as if we have to have more people on to talk about it in addition to that. We actually have some very, very good guests on today. One who's a first-timer, that's Mike Robbins, coach over at New Mexico Junior College, and a returning guest. I think this is his third time on. Is it third time, Matt? It'd be Matt Pierce of South Texas Sliders and Kincaid Baseball. Welcome to the show, guys. But Matt, let you talk first because you are my co-host. Welcome, your friends. Let's go.
Yeah, Pierce is looking a whole lot more comfortable now on his third time on.
Yeah.
He's leaned back. He's
I'm not like the one that's like going to be contributing as much as the other guys here.
Yeah, you're going to contribute.
That's just what you do.
If you're listening and you don't know who Matt Pierce is at this point, then you're not a regular listener and we don't really care about you. No, that's not what we're saying. But Matt Pierce, third time on the show, does a whole bunch of different stuff. Specialization hitting, high school coach, club baseball coach, private hitting instructors, worked with pro guys, works with current college guys, worked with some softball players. And then we've got, for the first time on the show, a longtime friend of Matt Pierce, and I actually acquired both these guys into my Rolodex at the same time back in 2017 when they showed up and they were nails at one of the first ever PDP events. Mike Robbins, who's currently the head coach at New Mexico Junior College, one of the premier junior college programs in the country. These guys used to coach together. They go way back. We know Pierce is a progressive mind, and he thinks about everything and uncovers all kinds of things that most people don't uncover. Mike is of the same ilk and probably a little bit more pitching focused. And we were having a conversation, Jeff, with Pierce the other day, and he was like, "Hey, you got to get Mike Robbins on here because, you know, he was one of the first ones that was kind of on velocity programs and kind of working that into his repertoire as a pitching coach. But now he's kind of starting to think maybe he should scale that back. Is there a way to scale it back?" Brings us to the topic of conversation today, which is velocity. How did we get here? Why are we here? And is there an undo button? And we're going to talk about a whole bunch of different stuff. But yeah, Mike Robbins, New Mexico Junior College, Matt Pierce, obviously, you know, Jeff. Before we get into anything, we got to put Mike on the spot.
Oh no!
As a guy who has traveled a fair amount, he's woven into the fabric of the amateur game. Sandwich scale, 20-80, Subway, Jimmy John's, Jersey Mike's, Capriati's. What do you got? If you don't want to 20-80 them, that's fine. But if you want to prep them out,
no. So you're saying grade sandwiches right now?
Yeah, you got to grade these sandwiches.
All right. Well, so anybody that knows me knows I don't just go eat a sandwich. So they're all 20s in my opinion. I don't go get sandwiches. So I'm going to have to defer to you guys, the experts on sandwich grades, because that ain't me.
That's a very unique answer there.
Yeah.
I mean, you can
first.
Yeah, I don't know. Sandwiches, like, I just – you know, if I'm hungry, I don't sit there and say, "Oh, I'm going to go get a sandwich." You know, like, it just – maybe it's where I'm from. We don't just do sandwiches.
Appreciate that. Yeah, Jeff's a little rattled over there. You can see it.
Jeff, that's not a good answer, man.
You like sandwiches? No, it's a great answer. I just want to know what you're eating instead.
Yeah.
Tacos.
Yeah, tacos. That's a good point. Tacos.
Yeah. Tacos and barbecue.
Barbecue, there you go, but not sandwich barbecue. So I don't know. I don't have an answer there.
There's also really good New Mexican cuisine. I tried that out in like Arizona. I haven't had it in actual New Mexico. I didn't know it existed. And
it's,
I would say, Matt and I have talked about this. It's one of my favorites.
It's a special form. There's no doubt.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
Yep.
Yeah, you got chili rellenos down there?
I don't eat chili relleno that very often, but the like New Mexican food is more of like you could call it authentic, I guess, but it's more chili based food, yeah. Like stews and stuff like that. So it's more of like a home cooking style than it is like a lot of tacos and stuff like that. Yeah.
They had a pisola that was like incredible. That was really good.
And then pork in Arizona, you said? Yeah.
Yeah. It was I forget. Cafe Adobo, something like that.
Mm.
It's right near the park in Mesa, the Cubs facility in Mesa.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
But we've been there. We play over there a lot. Mexican food. Yeah. I wouldn't be eating sandwiches either. Eat that stuff.
Cool. Mike, right. You want to give us a little bit of background on kind of, you know, your, I guess, pitching philosophies, what you teach, what you've taught, how it's evolved over the years, kind of the different rabbit holes you went down, the things you tried, the things you liked.
Well, yeah, sure. So, I mean, right now I would say that it's more of a holistic approach, I think. You know, it's most certainly not a one-size-fits-all, which when, to me, all the velocity stuff started creeping in, that's what everybody did, was a one-size-fits-all. You have to do it this way. These protocols produce this. Boom, 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 boom. Follow the lead and it'll work. And I just think when you start putting context around like what is working, I think you're coming up with different answers across the board. And so I did that. And I think that was partly successful. Not a lot of guys getting hurt, so on and so forth. You know, then as time just progressed, you start to notice things and trends that are happening. And is it really the safest thing? Is it really the best thing for kids to be learning right now? Is it really true that you have to have just crazy amount of stuff, raw stuff, to get outs? Is that really true? And I think you can point to the highest level of the game and say, yes, that's true. I mean, I think the data proves it. But let's just be honest. All four of us can be honest here. Not every kid on my roster is going to play in MLB, right? Not every pitcher is going to pitch in MLB. But we have a ton of kids that are 87 to 92, somewhere in that range, right? What will throwing 93 really do? If I'm 87, what will throwing 89 really do? And I think what I started to notice is over the years, that insane chase for 2 extra mile an hour to go to 90 or 89 at max effort for an inning or two at their age is just lunacy, in my opinion. That just, it's not good for them. I mean, if you were telling me their plan was a structured plan to get them from 87 to 95 over the course of 3 to 5 years, and that they were willing to sacrifice a lot of things to get to that, I could say, okay. But if you're telling me I'm going to go do this 3-month thing where I go from 87 to 91 in a max effort bullpen on a perfect conditioned facility, I've just started to lean towards not really understanding that the need for that. I don't think that's the proper way to do it. I think just saying raw stuff will get you there is false. I don't believe that. I think there's more to it. I think there's a lot more to it. And I think the conversation that we're having about Glasnow and these other guys is a different conversation than you're having for the average junior college pitcher or even the average Division I pitcher. Let's be honest. I mean, those two conversations are different. It's not the same thing.
Yeah, and so, it trickles down further, your average high school pitcher. Yeah, and we'll get into that in a little bit, but just how accessible arm velocity programs are.
Yeah, so I think what I'd tell you is my philosophy is whatever works, we're going to do. If I feel that you need to add stuff, we're going to work on your stuff. If your stuff is already good enough to be recruited out of my place, we're going to work on how you use your stuff. Is there a slight change we can make on how you spin a certain pitch that makes you more effective? Is there a slight delivery adjustment we can make to make you a little more deceptive and stuff like that? Because I tell our guys, if you want to get recruited, the number one way to do it is to help us win. If you help us win, you're a winning player in the eyes of people that recruit. And so to me, that's always going to play out. That will always play. I don't know y'all's opinion on that, but in my experience, winning will always play. There will always be a role for winners.
No doubt. And I wanted to jump in here quick and sort of back up to something that you said, talking about, you know, comparing, contrasting a longer sort of program. We'll say you use the example of like 3 to 5 years of building up velocity versus the sort of get rich quick or get velocity quick sort of schemes of 3 months, the training programs that guys will do in the off season. What does that look like in terms of like the longer haul? And it seems like, you know, there might be some feeling that that might be the right way to do it long term. What does that look like? I mean, obviously, it's a longer haul and guys are, you know, always up against it in terms of years, et cetera. But what does that sort of look like?
Yeah, I mean, I think we all four of us on this talk, we all know people that are experts in these fields that can – they can talk to you about movement quality. They can talk to you about strength. They can talk to you about pitch tracking data. They can talk to you about nutrition. They can talk to you about all those things. In my opinion, that's what it looks like. All those things wrapped into one. And catching a kid at an early stage and teaching them, this is the safest way to do it. This is your, this has to be your goal, is to accumulate this training economy over this amount of time. If we're just going to tell a 17-year-old, you know, or whatever, 16-year-old, 18, 21-year-old, hey, you currently throw 92, you know, if you get that to 97, you're going to get drafted. Well, that's maybe, right. maybe not. I mean, I've seen arms at the junior college level that are 94 to 96 that are not prospects. They're not prospects at all.
I want to jump in here because I think that, you know, you kind of touched on something there, right? Like, okay, in 3 months, you can increase your velocity this much versus like, here's a 3 to 5 year plan. And I think this is just something that I've speculated on for a long time in a number of different capacities. But I think with like the advent of the smartphone going back however many years, and I promise this is going to tie back to what we're talking about. We can get whatever information we want at any time directly at our fingertips, right? Any time of day, right? You used to have to wait until the new Sports Center dropped at 8 o'clock in the morning before you could see the new highlights. Otherwise, you were just seeing the late night edition of Sports Center when you woke up in the morning, right? I used to have to go get the newspaper to get the box scores. The Red Sox were playing on the West Coast. I might not even get the score before I go to school, right? But today's kids are growing up with like, I can have anything I want now. So I think that has conditioned not just our kids, but I think all of us as adults who have evolved with technology to be very impatient with things, just things in general, right? So now if there's a way to accelerate that 3 to 5 years of development into 3 months, people are choosing that option. Now, why are they choosing that option? It's because there's an incentive. I think this is like economics 101, and I think this is a really important place to start this conversation in regards to velocity. It's just people are incentives driven. If there's an incentive, they are going to find the most efficient way to get to that point. And it might not always be the most, you know, safe way to do it, but the reality is what we're looking at right now is velocity is a predictor for success at the highest level of the game. And then that has a trickle down, because that trickles down to the highest level of Division I baseball. And then all the other Division I baseball programs follow that. And then junior college. And now you've got kids who are chasing velocity in high school to get noticed by colleges because, you know, and Pierce has said this a number of times over the past couple of months, like colleges pay attention when you hit a 3 or 4, right? They're not paying attention until you hit a 3 or 4. And he's not saying D3 colleges or, you know, D2 colleges. He's talking about the Power 5. Right. Like that's about where it starts. Right. But so you have this double-edged sword where velocity has kind of been proven, especially through analytics. Like, okay, I go out there and I throw my slider at 83 and then I'm able to go out there and throw my slider at 85. Every analytics model is going to tell you the 85 is going to generate way more whiff, and it's going to have a stuff plus, you know, whatever stuff plus rating you want to use, it's going to have a higher stuff plus rating. Right. And that's predictive of success. Okay, so how do I get my slider from averaging 83 to 85? well, my fastball's got to go up. All right. So now we get into an arm velocity program. Anyway, so it's this whole trickle down effect. And the bottom line is that
I want to add one thing in there that I think, and it wasn't on our outline that we talked about either, but what it also created was an avenue for people that felt they weren't currently involved in the game to get involved in the game and teach kids how to throw the ball harder, spin it harder, and stuff like that. The easy information you're talking about opened an avenue for anybody to jump in that felt they could help a kid generate 2 or 3 mile an hour more, you know, and that would be their way to create a name for their own self in the game. And I'm not going to call people out. I'm not here to do that. That's not what I'm really saying. But you can't deny that it did create that avenue. And so what started happening? You started getting a baseball training facility on every corner, on every street corner. And they're all over social media, and they're all over, and they're teaching things that aren't necessarily wrong in terms of I'm going to get this kid to throw the ball harder, and I'm going to show some incredible spin metrics and all the stuff. But it did create that avenue for those people, which exacerbated the problem, in my opinion. I mean, it has elevated this problem. It's escalated it. It's put it on a speed track. You know, now everybody can teach you how to throw the ball harder. And to be fair, they're accomplishing it, right? Like
they are accomplishing it. And you brought up kind of the point of like, okay, anybody gets in a lab and they just grip it and rip it. And I think as someone who's dug in on a lot of the top college arm prospects in this class, because I think that's one of the healthier demographics for this next draft, like, man, I'll call it out. Like Wake Forest and LSU, like I did a deep dive on all three guys on their weekend rotation. Like these guys just throw the piss out of the baseball, right? Yeah. It's like grip it and rip it. And it's like, there isn't a ton of command there with anything. They're not really pitching. It's like, yeah, Chase Burns, like that 87 mile per hour slider is a really good pitch. It might be the best pitch in the draft. There's going to be a ton of pro guys who aren't going to be able to hit it. But the fact of the matter is you have this guy throwing 87 mile per hour sliders. He doesn't necessarily locate it, but he's in and around the zone. And a college hitter, it doesn't matter. A college hitter is not going to hit that. They're just not.
They're not.
He's got these gaudy strikeout numbers, and eventually he's going to get to a level where people can hit that, or they can sit on it. They can at least see it. Right. And it's like, well, at what point does Chase Burns actually need to learn how to pitch? Right. I saw one pitcher in my dive, and I'm probably 15 pitches deep, that I was like, this guy has exceptional pitch ability, and he's not a Power 5 guy. He's at ECU. Trey Yves St. Laurent. I don't know how to say his last name, so I say that. Yeah,
I think you got it right.
Yeah. Anyway, I watched him pitch again on Friday, and like, it's fastball both sides of the plate, up and down in the zone, and like, he starts and ends with the fastball. And then when he throws like the split change that's disgusting, like, he just goes right back to the fastball. It's not like, okay, I've got a really good pitch and I'm just going to keep throwing that same pitch. He pitches. So he's got probably a bag of like average to above average pitches that play up because he's got pitch ability. And like, I feel like that was a conversation you could have in scouting a couple of years ago. It's like, oh, you know, this guy does that, and this guy does that, and he's better than some of his parts. And now it's just like, all right, grip it and rip it. Like, who actually has fastball command right now in college baseball?
Honestly, I'm so tied up with our own team. I can name you two guys on my roster that have fastball command, but I mean, you know, it's 88 and it's not on SEC Network. So,
right.
You're right. But then they're being told that it don't matter. That's the concept is that it doesn't matter. Right. The lie that I think is being told is that, well, big league guys throw it 100 with no command. And guys, that's not true. That's not true. Watch Jacob DeGrom pitch when he's healthy again. It'll be 99 miles an hour in all four corners of the strike zone. That's called command. That's not – he's not spraying it up there. He's commanding it. I mean, it's got to be both. To me, it's got to be both. Like,
yeah.
And if you can't do it, if you can't do one because the other one is to the certain extreme, then you're not a big leaguer. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but it also – it kind of comes back to what you were saying before and saying it's not a one-size-fits-all approach, right? So, So, like, there's some guys out there, like, you know, Trey Yesovich at ECU. Like, that guy has command. right? And it's like, there's some guys that, like Glasnow said it in his comments, like, yeah, I'm never going to be Greg Maddux, so I do have to go out there and throw as hard as I can, right? And it's like, well, I mean, at this point, like, he's not going to be Greg Maddux because he's, well, like, that's the wrong message to send to like a 15-year-old.
Right? I disagree with that message. Yeah. I mean, Tyler Glasnow is an amazing pitcher. I disagree with that messaging. I think that messaging is for somebody that's already maybe in pro ball, that if you want to get to the big leagues, you better go from 93 to 97, 98 if you want to get to the big leagues. I think I'd agree with that message. I don't agree with that message to a 16-year-old.
Right.
I don't. I don't agree with that message to a 15-year-old. I don't even agree with that message to my 18 and 19-year-olds here. You know, I don't even agree with that message to them. Let's say Tyler Glasnow is a 25-year-old in Double A through 93 with decent success. Somebody in advanced scouting or somewhere in those analytic departments in those clubs are going to tell him, that's fine, but if you want to go to the big leagues, it's got to be 97, 98.
Right.
And then, yeah, he goes home in the offseason and he trains at whatever facility and he gets there, right? And he gets there and he makes the big leagues. But that's not going to work for 90. I mean, I don't know what percentage, but a big percentage of the population, that's going to equal breaking. You know, you're going to break, and making the big leagues is still a very slight, small percentage chance. Like,
well, I do kind of want to go in the time, get in the time machine here for a second. We'll let Pierce say something and then we'll get in the time machine.
So this is kind of, you know, we talk about the velocity in the youth baseball game, and I'll stand on is that, like, the velocity is what creates opportunities. And, you know, we can sit there and say that we can turn on the TV and the guy that you said, Trey, I'm not even going to try to pronounce the last name. What is he pitching at right now?
He's like 93, 95.
Yeah. And he was that in high school, right? Like, and he's at ECU, right? He was 93 in high school and he's at ECU. So it's like, when we turn on the TV and I see a guy at Texas State or Sam Houston in their 87, and we're like, yeah, see, it works. But I go on their perfect game profile and they have numerous times of hitting 91, but now they're in college pitching 87. And so the guys Robbins is talking about that he has, like, I swore by those guys for a whole summer. They pitched for me, right? Like, and they were really freaking good. And they were what he says, and he's probably made them a lot better. That's why I like to send them over to them. But they were really good as high school pitchers that were 86, 88, and, like, induced a ton of swing and miss. And quite frankly, Robbins was the only one that bit on the guys, right? Like, I mean, he loved them, and for what he's saying right now, right? Because he has a belief that those guys could win baseball games, and they're going to get to the next place after him because they win baseball games. And I think that's true, but it's hard for me to, like, look at what Glasnow is saying and say it doesn't apply to all levels of the game for every player playing the game. This is my third time on the podcast. My first time on the podcast was about, you could put into this topic, right? It was about exposure funnel and opportunity. And my son played a 12U double A game this past weekend, and we saw a pitcher for an organization that I'm not going to name, that the team should not have been playing double A, was throwing 64 miles an hour as a 12-year-old. Like, that's fuel, right? Like, and that kid's going to continue to throw fuel, and that fuel at 12 will bring him the opportunity to get invited to the next big thing. And, like, we know that's true. Pajak, you've been in the industry. It's what the whole thing was about as the funnel. And as they continue to climb and they get to the next best thing, they're going to come up short and they're going to be told, well, at 15 years old, it needs to be this. And, like, this will get you here. And they're going to shoot for that. And then they become the 87 guy and they're told, they see all their other buddies that are 90 and they're getting committed to any Division I. And so I don't, like, I think it's in them to say, man, I got to do this. And then the same is true. If you're 91, it's like, man, if I can get to 95, it's possibly a payday. And I think that's what he's saying is, do I risk this for a reward? You know, the quote that Pajak said that I used was, you know, driving a car 200 miles an hour in a circle will kill you. Like, you can die doing that. But if you don't do that, you'll never win the Daytona 500. Like, it's just, it won't happen. And these kids are being told from a young age, this is why you're playing baseball, because you want to play for LSU. You want to play for Wake Forest. You want to play for insert whoever. That the whole industry tells you right now, from social media to everybody coaching the game, we all think we have the next Glasnow and or the next Mike Trout, right? And so if that's what they're being told from a young age, that's who they are, they're going to chase it. And that's what gets rewarded. That's what gets paid. And it is what it is, in my opinion. Last thought on this, the portal and programs seeing what it's like to get older, the one pitcher that I can name that did the five-year plan that Robbins is talking about was Kevin Cobbs. His last pitch on perfect game, his senior year, fall of his senior year, was 86 miles an hour. And the guy did what nobody thought he could do, and he walked on at Arkansas, and he did the plan with both Wes Johnson and what's his name after him. And now he's with the Padres with a DST employee and Garrett Kelly. And he's throwing 96, right? And he does have the one pitch he can throw a million times that you're going to swing and miss at. So, like, it's just hard. It's hard for me to get behind. I understand it's dangerous, but, you know, Jeff, you said it the other day in one of our phone calls when we were talking about a current big leaguer, that the name of the game right now is controllable young pitching, right? Like, that's where Major League Baseball is. And I think, Mike, that answers your question why there's nowhere for a junior college pitcher at 21 to go, because everybody wants young, controllable pitching. And if you're not throwing those velos at young ages,
I don't have a question of why they don't have anywhere to go. I'm aware of where they have to go and where they don't get to go. My opinion on Kevin, though, is he doesn't fit the discussion we're talking about right now, because 86, fall of his senior year, now he's, 25 in 96? That fits what I'm saying.
That's what I meant. That's what I was saying. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, can't in today's climate, is any Division I school going to allow that to happen again?
Yeah,
and literally is no way. Like,
all right. And so this is where this. How many of the four of us, be honest, I played, Matt, you played, I'm sure Matt and Jeff, you both played. When we played, yes, we had dreams of going to MLB. We had dreams of going to name it Division I. We had all those dreams. But the focus was at the time in those days, help your team win where you are. It wasn't so destination-based, meaning I wanted to be Randy Johnson. I never believed I was going to be Randy Johnson, but I knew that if I, like, focused on trying to help my team win, I would get my opportunities. That's what we were told. That's how it was told to us. Now it's told to you, dude, throw 98 and you'll make millions. Well, it's like – maybe not. There's guys throwing go on Twitter right now. I guarantee you can find a guy throwing a bullpen 99 miles an hour, and it says looking for free agent opportunities. So it's not true. 99 miles an hour just doesn't get you there. It's not just that gets you there. It can't be just that. Otherwise, all those guys on Twitter throwing 99 on those bullpen videos would be an MLB. You know,
I do think there's a little combination of throw. There are guys that are throwing 99, like you said, that aren't getting the opportunity. at the same time, like, there are guys that are throwing 99 that are just as good as that guy throwing 99 that are getting the opportunity. I think a little bit of that is like who you know. Maybe there's a little nepotism mixed in there. Maybe there's a little bit of like track record. You're famous. You're from an area that's famous.
Okay. You know, that's my point. And right. That's one of my points is that you can sell out. You could put yourself at risk to break and hurt yourself, and you could get to MLB. But the chance of it is still this small. Even if you throw 99, it's still this small. It's still that small. So to say we're all going to sacrifice it to make our millions, which is actually Glassnow's direct comment in that interview, that's not the right path for every kid. There's no way I can be convinced of that.
I think there's stages of it, right? There's different conversations. There's guys who are 84 trying to sell out to get to 90 for a college opportunity. There's guys who are 92 trying to sell out for 97 plus for a pro opportunity, right? It's just, where do you fit in the bucket? I don't think either one is true, that if you get to 90, you'll pitch at your said college. Like, you may get there and never anybody out all fall and never play. But the guy, I mean, it's the first question every college coach asks me, how hard do you throw? Like, and if I can't see 90, it's just like they don't show up. So many kids are getting at young ages simply because they throw 90. Like, it's just straight projection.
So I never take a radar gun with me when I go watch a pitcher, because I already know what his velocity is. I've already got facility video of him touching the 88 or 90. I already know that's what he is. I'm going to go watch him and find out how he spins the ball. What's his presence like? Is he a competitor? Does he love to pitch? Or does he love to train to pitch? Which one? You know, do you love to play or do you love to practice? And I'm not saying you don't have to love to practice. I'm saying, do you love training and practicing more than you like playing? And to me, those things tell you a lot more. I mean, you're gonna find yourself a lot more than this other stuff. I mean, and I'm not saying that there's not a reason to be training for velocity right now. That's obviously true. There is a reason for it. What I'm saying is the question is, what's causing all these kids to get hurt? And this is it. I mean, this is it. When the percentage chance of making the big leagues is still this. It always has been this, and it still is this.
That goes back to Pierce's comment, though, because, like, as we talked about, velocity is an indicator for success, but it's also – and it's the leading indicator for some type of arm injury, right? So it's like, yeah, I mean, if you want to try and win the Daytona 500, like, you do have to drive the car 200 miles per hour, and that is a really dangerous thing to do. I guess it's a little bit of, like, when do you, you know, try and drive the car 200 miles per hour? I think that's more the discussion that we're having here, right? I do want to make one – related thought to that conversation, and then I do want to hop in the time machine because I think it's important. There was, and this is the one time I'm probably going to tip my cap to the NCAA with the new recruiting rules on when you can start engaging players and actually offering them. But I remember when I was at USA Baseball, there was a kid on the 15U national team through 95, and he was like 5'11". 190 pounds, 15 years old. He threw 95. I saw 95s like consistently on the stadium, which was tied to the track, man, 95s consistently. And he was an Arkansas commit, 15 years old. But you know, by the time I saw him at 17 or 18, he was 90, 92, but he was still at every event because he was 95 when he was 15. Right. So then he goes to Arkansas and he barely pitches at Arkansas in his first year, and he kicks back. And I think he's still kicking around. I don't think he's ever gotten back to 95. Right. And he didn't get any bigger. He's still 5'11", 190 pounds, but he was 95 when he was 15 and he was committed to Arkansas. And then, you know, it all just kind of backed up. So where he's at right now is he's 23 years old and he's at Rogers State, which I don't even know what level of college baseball that is.
But he's Division at Rogers two.
State. Division two.
Yeah.
So there you go. So he's. And then, like, to kind of your point on Kevin Copps, right? Like, there's. One of the, I'm a little bit biased here, right, on Garrett Crochet, but Garrett Crochet was mid-80s his senior year of high school before he went to Tennessee. I think I sent Pierce some video, right? And, like, yes, he did blow out, but he didn't blow out until he was in the big leagues, and he was throwing 100, 102, and he got hot three straight days, which is something he had never done in his life because he had always been a starter. I mean, again, multitude of different factors for why you can blow out. It's not just because, you know, maybe in his case, it's not just because he threw hard. It was whatever it was. But right now, in this day and moment, he is the number one starter for the Chicago White Sox, and he's holding 96, 97, and he's doing it easy, and he's doing that over, you know, 80 pitches as they stretch him out. And he's been dominant.
Right? He's a physical monster.
Mid-80s in high school.
Sure. He's a physical monster.
Yep, and a physical monster, which is a completely different superpower, right? But hop in the time machine, and I do want to go back to, like, the origin of, you know, kind of where this all kind of got on my radar. And I've talked about this with Jeff and Pierce. I mentioned this last week. Shane Bieber. Shane Bieber was a fourth rounder in 2016 draft out of UC Santa Barbara. And Shane Bieber was the pitchability righty. And that's why he was a fourth rounder and he wasn't a first rounder, because he could really freaking pitch. And Cleveland was on the front end of velocity-based development in professional baseball. And all of his stuff ticked up. He became the big leaguer that we knew as Shane Bieber. He won a Cy Young. He's now 28 years old. His stuff was ticking back. He went searching for velocity again in the offseason. After two starts, he blew out Tommy John. All right. So let's go back to the beginning of that. So Shane Bieber has that success. There's a bunch of guys in Cleveland that are also having success adding velocity around the time. Then there's a trickle-down effect. Everybody gets on board. Now it's in every professional pitching development situation, right? And then that trickles down to college baseball, high levels of college baseball. Now it's everywhere from D1, D2, D3. And now it's in high school baseball programs as well. Arm velocity programs, weighted balls, whatever it is, whatever your cup of tea is, to add velocity became widely accessible to everybody because it was proven at the highest level that it contributed to a level of success for, you know. That's how I'm not saying Shane Bieber was the example, the universal example. That was the first one that I saw, right? First one I saw in college was Bryce Jarvis, because I was living in Durham, North Carolina, and I saw Bryce Jarvis go from 90-92 to 93-95. In one summer, and there was an article in D1 baseball that he spent half the summer at Driveline, half the summer lifting, you know, whatever it was. And all of his stuff was up two or three ticks. The slider all of a sudden wasn't, you know, 81, 83, it was 85, 87. And I'm just like, okay, like, yeah, that's a first rounder, right? And you saw it. But I don't know. I guess all of that to kind of say, like, the things that make you good, that have made you good, have given you a competitive advantage in success in baseball over the past, call it 25 years. Steroids, you can test for that. So you can ban it. All right. Spider tack, you can pat down fingers and see how sticky they are. So you can kind of test for that and you can ban it. Right. But like how hard someone throws and how they're achieving that and how fast they achieve that, whatever it is, you can't test for that, right? Someone jokingly made a tweet on Twitter that was like, all right, if someone throws over 95 in a big league game, doesn't matter what the pitch is, just automatic ball. You know what I mean? It's tongue-in-cheek, but it's also like, it goes back to like the very root of this conversation. It was like, is there an undo button? Because like, this all started because and Jeff probably knows better than I do, and maybe you guys know better than I do. Robbins, you might know better than I do on this, right? But like, Driveline, like the OG arm velocity program, started in a park with Robert Stock, maybe? That's the first example I remember.
It depends on if you consider Driveline to be the first one.
Well, that's true, right? I mean, but Driveline's
obviously one before him. I mean, you know.
Driveline's commercialized it and they've made it accessible.
Yeah, the one to explode. The first one to really explode, yeah.
Right. They've made it so that the high school coach in New York can write his own program. But bottom line is Robert Stock was never going to be a big leaguer as he was because he couldn't locate. He wasn't Greg Maddux, right? Mm-hmm. So he got in a park and he threw the piss out of some weighted balls, and he did get to the big leagues. And I don't think he ever had any success there, but he did get there. Okay. But like that's a little bit of like, hey, this is who this is for. The problem was when Shane Bieber and Bryce Jarvis, two guys who could really pitch, also started using what the guy who maybe didn't have as much ability to pitch was using. And then it became, okay, whether you can pitch or you can't pitch, everyone's just going to use this. And that goes back, I think, to your conversation or your comment earlier, Mike, on one size fits all versus like hey, okay, for the guy that can really pitch, who's like a couple ticks away from being a prospect, maybe we should, you know, kind of push the chips in here and try and get those couple extra ticks and see if you can pitch, you know, one or two ticks up. But for the guy who's, you know, we're not going to just like the guy who, you know, doesn't have the greatest feel of pitch, we're not going to just make him throw harder. I don't know.
But that's what we are doing.
That's what we're doing. Yeah. Across the board.
That's what we're doing. Regardless of age, regardless of body type, regardless of genetics, regardless of all of it. I saw a guy, you know, this is a hypothetical scenario, but I know this is also what, how some people are thinking. I watched this documentary, short Twitter documentary of this guy going from an 81 mile an hour unathletic dude to 3 years later throwing 92. I'm just going to condense all of what he did in that 3 year period into 4 months. And I'm 5'10 and 160 pounds. And I'm going to up my velo 3 or 4 miles an hour. And you know what? They're succeeding at doing that one thing. But that's not, in my opinion, that's not necessarily creating the opportunity that you guys are saying. Is it getting you on a radar where somebody sends you a Twitter DM and they say, hey, are you uncommitted? Yeah, it will. But that's not necessarily creating opportunity, in my opinion. I mean, it's just not. I mean, there's junior college baseball is littered with kids that throw 93 miles an hour. They're everywhere. I'm not necessarily looking for 93. That's not necessarily what is important to me. You know what I mean? So that is what's happening. What you're saying is what's happening. They're taking the kid with marginal stuff that can pitch and saying, oh, just throw it harder. And the chance to make the big leagues is still this.
Right.
It still is this, even for that kid.
And I don't think what you're saying is incorrect at all. I'm just saying what I think is causing it, right? Like, and what's causing it is.
Oh, we're all in agreement on what's causing it.
Well, I'm just talking what's causing the mentality, right? Like, nobody wants to tell little Johnny who's 84 that like, oh, even if you throw 93, you're still not going to do it because you can't locate, right? Like, no one wants to tell that kid that. They want to tell him, well, throw 93 and then it doesn't matter, right? Like,
yeah, they need to be telling him that though.
But I know that, but like, no one's doing that because, like you said, it's not just a pitching corner, a pitching place open on every corner. It's baseball, select baseball, youth baseball may be the only industry. It takes no certifications, no job title, no anything to go start a select baseball, a pitching facility, a hitting facility.
Yeah.
I mean, it takes nothing. Like,
yeah, which is what I was saying earlier.
Yes. Go charge people money and they'll pay you to go play at your local park until your nose bleeds, right? Like,
well, in the private baseball training industry is the same exact way.
That's right. I agree with that. Agree. But how, so now to the question, like, will it ever change?
I mean,
well, I guess the question here is really for Robbins, because this is what it goes back to. Is like, Mike Robbins, you're in a very competitive junior college program. Like, do you think that you could make less of an emphasis on velocity in your program and still have the success that you're having or attain the success that you want to attain?
We're doing it. I'm not trying to say I got all the answers, because I don't. I don't have all the answers. But people ask me all the time, what's a kid have to be throwing to be for NMJC to be interested? And I, you know, I'll consistently say, and this fits what y'all are saying, I'll consistently say, look, we don't have a right-handed arm that throws under 88 consistently. That is the truth. But some of them weren't 88 when we recruited them. Some of them were 84 to 86 when we recruited them. Some of them really spun off speed. Like, you could go and watch them pitch, and the off speed they spun was clear. It was an outlier. That traditionally has always been an indicator that says velo is coming with this kid, because look how fast he spins the slider. Look how fast he spins this curveball. That is an indicator that he might throw harder. That's a decades-long indicator. We've always said that. That's always been a thing. I've never gone to a high school game and somebody asked that question, and I'm telling them, well, look, man, I'm trying to get every right-handed arm to throw 92. Would I love for them to all throw 92? Yeah, I would. But that's just not what it takes. It don't take every guy throwing 92. That's not what it takes for us to win here, and that's not what it takes for you to get recruited either. And anybody that's telling you that is, I don't want to say the word lying to you, but they're misleading you also in a way. They just are. I mean, you can turn on Division I games every single weekend, and they're not every right-handed arm is 94. That's just untrue. So the narrative out there that you have to throw 94 to go to Division I, false. I'm here to tell you it's false. So I would tell you that I'm out of the Velo farm game. Like, I'm not trying to be the Velo you here. Like, I'm just not. Velo JC. We're trying to be good pitching JC. Does that include having some guys that throw it harder? Of course. Of course. We want them to throw it hard. We want them to spin off speed correctly. We want them to throw changeups correctly. We want them to throw it to both sides of the plate and know when to throw it on each side of the plate. Get the ball down in the strike zone. Hey, and then guess what? When you turn 21 at the good Division I you go to, if the velo ticks up to 95 at that place, now you're on to something because you've proven you can pitch. And now you got the stuff to go with it. That's my philosophy on it. But at the same time, every video I get of a kid in the Dominican Republic throws 99, I call the handler on him. I text right. The handler on him because, yeah, I would like to have that too. But I'm not telling kids, hey, it has to be this or you can't pitch somewhere. To me, that's false. That's false.
I want to chime in too. Like in the last week, finally, right? In the last week, I've been at a major league game. I've been at a college Division I game, a Power Fives. One of them was Wake Forest. They played. I saw Chase Burns. And I was at two AA games. And I actually saw more velocity from some of the guys in the college games than I did in the AA game or in the major league game. I think Cutter Crawford that day was like 93 at max. And
Ross Stripling was 91 the other night.
Yeah. And Irvin was like 92, throwing a lot of off speed, both of them. But I think the big difference is, and you see it, is guys can locate, as you said, guys go throw to both parts of the plate. They'll pitch backwards. They have confidence in their off-speed stuff or their breaking ball, being able to throw it in the zone. That's the difference between the pro guys and the guys that are even in the major leagues. It is about execution. But you certainly have to have a certain level of physicality and stuff to get into pro ball and to get those opportunities. But I mean, how many of those guys are there even within the college game that have that physicality and, the projection, all the pieces? Like, you really do need to be able to pitch. I think it's so clear when you watch the different levels. And I mean, you guys obviously all do, but just seeing it play out last week, it was clear. Like, there were guys in BC's pen that threw 95. But none of those guys could step onto a AA field and get outs right now. It would be embarrassing, right? And I think that's a big part of it. You do have to throw strikes. You do have to get outs. And it was something that was said offline. We were talking about the Glasnow thing, and we were comparing. I know you brought up the Maddox name there, or he brought it up. The strike zones are much smaller now. They're much more strictly controlled. And that's not just at the major league level. That's at the minor league level. It was a AAA game a couple weeks ago. And there were pitches that, on the backfields, AA, where they don't have the challenge system, those pitches are strikes. They're called strikes. No one's challenging it. It's just going on. Where now in AAA, and it's going to come to the majors, like, you got to be in the zone if you're throwing strikes. And you're not going to swing and miss all the time. So you do have to get some called strikes that are actually – like pinpoint. So I think the emphasis on command is greater than people realize. And I think sometimes it's separate from the conversation about like a Bobby Miller or some of these guys that maybe didn't have command at the level they do now, or control over command they do now in pro ball that they did in college, where, sometimes those guys have abilities that a pro organization can unlock when they have 6 months to work on something in an off season too. There's so many other elements of this, but you do need to be able to pitch.
Kind of the advocating for actually needing to be able to pitch. I'm glad you brought up Bobby Miller, because I know I brought him up last week when we kind of broke the ice on this discussion. And it's the first game he pitches here. Yeah, he was a control over command guy in college, and some people would argue that his control wasn't even that great. Dodgers player development. He kind of like took his time getting through the minor leagues, debuted last year, had some success at the big league level. And then he came out with the stuff that everybody knew that he had and on his first start of the season against the St. Louis Cardinals. And he had, for that one night, 70 command, right? He was hit all of his spots and he looked like a superhero. It was one of the, it was one of the best pitching performances that I've seen, right? I know I'm not that old, but it was that good. Okay. And the next two starts, he didn't have that command. He kind of reverted back a little bit. Well, what happened? He had the same stuff the next two starts. He didn't have the same command. Well, the next start, he was, you know, six earned runs and he was out of the game in the third inning. That's a little bit of like what I'm talking about. And it's like Chase Burns, like undoubtedly has that level of stuff. You saw it, Jeff. You saw it in person, right? That's the question on Chase Burns. And that's why he's not just like a slam dunk 1-1. The question on Chase Burns is like, you know, is he ever going to give us 60 command and be able to go out there? Or is it just going to be like, here's your turbo stuff? And like, that's the tough thing. And I know we all watch college baseball here. It's a tough thing watching like this high profile Power Five college baseball right now. It's like, it's just grip it like this, throw it as hard as you can, grip it like this, throw it as hard as you can, grip it like this, throw it as hard as you can somewhere around the plate.
Yeah, and I mean, I watched Chase Burns. I mean, it's a slider at 90 that takes a left turn, right? There aren't a lot of pitches like that. But I also, going through the tape, you know, I watch the game, I shoot video, and then I cut it up and I put it onto Twitter and I put it into our YouTube channel so people can go back and watch it. But I get that second look as I'm cutting through the video. And the thing that I kept asking myself is like, you know, double A, triple A, obviously the majors, but the upper minors where the quality of baseball was just frankly better. I don't know how many of those sliders he got whiffs on guys are swinging at. Like, he's not facing a 5'6 guy from Boston College that can't cover the outer half of the plate, even if he stepped on the inner half of it to try to do it, right? Like, of course that guy's going to miss on that pitch. There's a lot of guys in pro ball that are going to take that pitch, or if he does leave any of it like sort of in the shadow zone in the outer half, he's facing James Wood. He might push that in the opposite field, you know, 350 feet. Like, it's just it's a different game. And, you know, you're dealing with the 3-4 hitters, 1-2-3-4 hitters on Power Five schools that are, you know, ranked in the top 25 every night. You know, like, there's guys that were big SEC superstars that are still sitting in AAA at, you know, 26 years old. Like, that's what you're dealing with. And I just think it's a totally different game, right? It looks great. The pitching ninja gifts look great, but is it actually going to get out the best hitters in the world? And that's the conversation we're having with ourselves when, you know, we're scouting these guys for whether it's, you know, pro ball or for the major leagues and the minors.
Yeah. I'm in the high school and below level, right? Like, and they see these numbers of big leaguers, and I get where y'all are coming at, like, to pitch in the major leagues, you got to pitch. It's not just about velo. You got to pitch. Like, that's proven. That's understandable. But to win at the high school level, it's also proven in the youth level. Hey, man, grip it and rip it, and the umpire is going to miss the guy who throws the hardest the most, right? Like, you can go check our film from center field camera. The harder you throw, the bigger the zone, man, because the guy just can't freaking call the dang thing. And when you got a guy throwing 82 – that every call gets correct, right? It's just like they make you throw it over the plate. And so that's what I'm trying to figure out. It's like, how does it, if we think that the arm farms, if we want to call it that, is what's creating it, how do you convince it at a young age, 12 to 17, that it's not worth it? Like, how? Like, that 88 to 90 in high school, dude, like, everybody will swing and miss. You drop hammers in there, the slider in high school, you're going to strike out a ton of hitters. And this year, our high school team, I mean, we're like excited when we see something below 86, 87. I mean, it's every freaking game, 86, 87. In our conference, we face 89 and 90. I think I was told he touched a 93. The kid's uncommitted and he pitched. And then we got a kid going to a smart D1 school. And it was 80, 87 to 91, and he pitched. And, like, the zone that they get is big. Now, I don't know if their stuff is great when it comes to, you know, what is he on track, man, to get drafted. I have no clue. All I know is I saw him induce a ton of swing and miss at the high school level. And we have a team full of freshmen out there, or not a team full of freshmen. We have freshmen on our team and other kids in the community that see, hey, man, throw 88, you strike out 14 for your high school team. Like, and they're going to do it. And the high school coach is saying the same thing. Like, holy cow, man, if I could just get my guy to 88, I mean, we have a chance to win every night we toe the rubber, right? And when does anybody care? How do you make it stop? I agree, it's not about what pitches at the big leagues. We know what pitches at the big leagues. But how do you change the narrative that it doesn't work in amateur baseball and it doesn't provide
when it does work?
Throw 82 in a public, in some of these public schools, a lot of the public schools in my area, throw 82, you won't pitch at your high school team. You just won't. Like, you won't.
Yeah. Well, to be frank, too, I'm not sure the conversation is about throw it as slow as possible and get away with it. I don't think that's, you know what I mean? Like, I don't think that's the discussion. I think the discussion is doing things that are quick fixes and this sprint race to throw harder. And is that best for every guy? And can you put the toothpaste back in the tube? Honestly, probably not. But as I said earlier, to me, it's the constant chase for, I see on Twitter that Chase Burns throws 98. I better hurry up and get to 98. Like, dude, you may never throw 98, no matter if you do every single thing right. If you do every risk prevention right with your eating, with how you train it, with your arm action, with your body, you may still never throw 98. So baseball to me, guys, is supposed to be about helping your current team win. What do I have to do to help my current team win as the guy on the mound? And for me, when you're constantly focused on that, the best things will happen to you. They just will. You'll get the most fulfillment out of it. What I think kids are missing now, and what I think coaches are missing now, a lot of them, and trainers, and everybody we're talking about, is that the goal of baseball is to get fulfillment out of it. And that's why you play. That's why you're on a team. You're not on the team to be the hero. You're on a team to be part of the team. And that's what we push that hard here. I'm telling you, I'm not lying to you. Every day, every single day, our messaging is, are you doing what you need to do to help us win this weekend? Are you preparing right to help us win this weekend? You'll never hear me say, hey, you working on one more degree of velocity? Hey, you won't hear us say that. But do you see guys make some velo jumps? Yeah, we've had some good velo jumps here. But we're focused on winning. That's what we want. We want the schools that come and recruit our guys to see winning players. You know, will you see five arms that throw 95 at New Mexico Junior College? Not currently, you won't. Might we have it in the future? Maybe. What we're trying to do is have our guys be fulfilled by playing here. And I think that's what a lot of people are missing. They're missing that because social media says, I got no offense to Rob at Pitching Ninja, I got to get on Pitching Ninja. And I'm not debating that that's a cool thing to see yourself on Pitching Ninja, but it's also not what baseball's about. It's just not.
Yeah, and it sounds like we're reverting to an old concept called utilitarianism. That's how it should be. The greatest number for the greatest good for the greatest number of people, right? And it's like we can't all be special as players. Can't all be special, but this team can be special, right? And if we kind of get back to that mentality a little bit at all levels. I mean, look, like Pierce, we had this conversation, and Jeff, you might have been a part of it, about like Brendan Donovan as a baseball player, right? Like he's a winning player. He's a competitor, right? And like there aren't a whole lot of those guys if you turn on big league baseball these days. Like, and this is getting into a different discussion because this is on the hitting side, but there just aren't like a ton of like really smart, heady baseball players that just go out and they compete and they don't take an at-bat off and this and whatever, right? But like it kind of gets back to like the me-centric versus, you know, what's best for the team-centric shift that we've kind of seen over the past however many years. Pierce, I think you were talking about, were you the one who, and this might have been a different discussion, so correct me if I'm wrong here, but you tied it back to, and Jeff was definitely part of this discussion, fantasy sports. And this isn't just a baseball thing. This is all sports, right? But like an emphasis on me versus my team. I don't know, Pierce, if you want to hop in.
Yeah, there. No, I mean, I've always talked about how, in my opinion, how fantasy sports change how we view sports. And we're, the further we go down this, I think these conversations become true, right? Like, fantasy football, in my opinion, created rules in football to provide more offense. Like, it's my belief, because those players are what drove fantasy football points, right? Like, and it's interesting now to tie it to baseball, that we elevate the players that put the best fantasy points up there, and the guys are going to put the most fantasy points are the guys who have the most strikeouts, right? Like, I mean, it's huge, right? Like, and does that create a me attitude in players when they look at the game, that they want to be that guy? They want to be, hey, our best pitcher at Kincaid, like, we're going to run him out there. He's 80, man. He's 80 miles an hour, and we feel pretty comfortable that we're gonna try to win a 3-2 ball game with that guy on the mound, right? And he's 80. So I'm a believer that it doesn't take things the 94 to be successful, that 88 to 90 in high school to be successful. It's just, if we got big leaguers out here talking about that, this is what they did, and going all the way back to tying us to, like I said, the exposure funnel.
Yeah, and I think we'll kind of round this conversation around here, but I think it's a really good point that Robin's brought up, though, about, like, you know, what can I do to help the team win? And that's kind of what we're trying. So me and Jeff grew up in New England. We're both big Patriots fans. Finally got around to listening to Earn Dog this weekend. Ernie Adams and Julian Edelman on Games with Names. Talk about February 2002, Patriots are in the tunnel down in New Orleans. They're getting ready to get announced. And they're in the tunnel, and the guy who's going to be doing the announcing is like, all right, who's coming out first? And they're like, no, we're coming out as a team, right? And, like, I just don't think that's something you can create. That was 2002. I don't think that's something you can create 2024. Like, it's just we're living in a completely different time. It's a real struggle, because, I mean, I think about my experience just around high school baseball in the past couple of years. If I'm a sophomore or a junior and I'm not the starting shortstop at my high school, like, I'm finding a new high school. What? But like that's where we're at. It's not like, okay, what can I do to help the team win? Oh, well, they want to roll me out there in right field every game. They want me to bat eighth as a sophomore. I'm like, nope. I need to go somewhere where I can play shortstop and, you know, I can be in the three hole right now. So,
yeah. And before we got done with this conversation, I did want to interject this point. And this may sound like it gaslighting a little bit, but I honestly mean this, and I'm telling you this from personal experience seeing it. This constant chase for more, more, more is causing mental health problems with some of these kids. And I'm telling you that because I see it personally. And we're talking about mental health a lot in our country right now and how it's in a bad place. And I'm telling you, this constant comparative society that we live in, where I got to be like the guy I'm seeing on Twitter, man, I'm not quite there yet. Man, I'm doing everything I can. I'm just not there yet. It's causing problems. I'm telling you, it's causing some real mental problems with some kids that play this game all the way into our level at the junior college level. And if I'm seeing it, it's got to be going to the Division I level to a certain degree, because in theory, they're closer to what those kids are trying to be, right? In theory, not in every case, but in theory, that's got to be true. And there's issues.
Well, I think it fits a lot here, and that's something that was touched on in the exposure funnel, right? Like, the mental things that it does to a kid to be on a pedestal from 12 years old, being told he's going to be a first round draft pick, and then not being a first round draft pick and being a bust in college, right? Like, there's no doubt. And we talked about this again with the exposure funnel of, you know, what it does to a 13-year-old. You throw 77 and you're on your organization's top team and you get to wear that jersey to school. Hey, man, you know, it happened here locally. High school does a baseball event, right? Community kids come have an event, wear your jersey. And it happened in this area that the kids in the select jerseys were making fun of the kids in the pony jerseys, right? And we all know the kids in pony jerseys in a pony jersey because he either A, doesn't throw as fast as the kids in the select jersey, or B, doesn't run as fast or hit as hard or whatever measurable we want to put in there. And it trickles all the way down to 12. So there's this race to keep up with your peers to throw harder and harder and harder, hit and run and all the stuff. And I agree, like there is it does create a mental health of everyone seeing on social media, I got to keep up, I got to keep up, I got to do this to get this. And I just want to know, how does it change? Like, does it change when Texas A&M signs a guy who throws 85? Like, is that what makes it change? Or how do you change it? Like, I know I don't want to do it. I'm not out here teaching kids to throw as burn it out as fast as you can. Do we do throwing programs and throw harder? Obviously, I got to build strength. I'm in a youth market, right? Like, we're trying to teach kids to throw the ball faster. Like, it is what it is. My son has a weak arm. We play catch a ton and long toss a ton to get it stronger. But how does it change? Like, how?
Yeah, and I do kind of want to just end this conversation with this moment. I'm hearing what you're saying. Social media is literally just your highlight reel. I think that's something that kids don't understand. It's like, you don't see the bad parts, right? So if you go on social media and you're just seeing everybody's highlights and you're having a bad day, it like compounds how shitty you feel, right? So apply that to baseball. There's a notable pitcher in the Power Five right now who was popping 99s preseason in bullpens, and they were posting this video. Right, the program was posting this video, popping 99s. I just looked on Synergy, average fastball velocity, and he's pitched all spring, is 91.7. So you can't find that information on Twitter, though. You can't find the information that his average fastball velocity this spring is 91.7.
No, but I got countless stories. I got countless stories of, I don't mean to interrupt you, but I'm gonna take what I was saying one step further before we end. It is traditional at this point now with college pitchers that they go home for their winter break and they train with whoever. And that person who is trying to make money, and I'm sure trying to influence kids positively, I'm sure, okay, posts a video of a kid throwing 92 and saying, oh, PR, fire emoji, fire emoji, fire emoji. And that kid comes back to his program. And hey, guess what, man? The junior college mound you're going to face and pitch on is not that rubber floor where it's super good. It's actually loose sand, dirt, bad, right? And now you look at your velo chart and it says 87. Oh, no. I'm supposed to be 92. Why am I 87 now all of a sudden? And then what happens? He starts max effort in trying to get to 88, 89, throws it right over the middle, loses us a game. Okay. And then he's got his coach yelling at him. We're only focused on what helps the team win. And he's like, no. They all told me I throw 92. I got to hurry up and get back to 92. So they start doing all this extra work on their own to get back to 92. And now their body's worn out. And now their velocity ticks down even further because they're worn out from trying to get back to that perfect scenario, 92, indoors on a perfect setting mound, perfect environment for it. And that just doesn't exist where we play. The perfect environment just doesn't exist. And now what do you start to see? You start to see their whole outlook on life change. Literally, their entire outlook on life changes, right? And it's just bad news, man. It's not good. It's not a good setting for them.
So my last words, and then y'all can wrap it up. we're all in agreement here that arm injuries are happening because of the amount of hard max effort throws we're trying to make from the ages of 13 to 22.
More or less chasing velocity.
Yeah.
I mean, we know objectively, right? That velocity leads to a much higher risk of injury.
Chasing and volume.
Yes.
Volume.
Yep.
Volume and velocity.
Right. And management of the volume when the volume occurs. Like, anyway, there's a lot. Yeah.
There's a lot.
But that's what the conversation was, right? Like, all the arm injuries that we're seeing, where is it coming from and how do we fix it? And we believe it's coming from max effort throwing because kids are trying to make their high school, they're trying to be on their number one select team. They're trying to make their varsity team as fast as possible. They're trying to get into the college ranks, to the highest college level that they can possibly get into as fast as possible, or they're trying to get to pro ball. Like, that's.
Yeah. I don't think we fix it. I think that's the thing here. I think the point is that the kid at the school that I was mentioning, he has a record on social media of him throwing 99 and no records of him averaging 91.7.
Right.
So for all of eternity, if you look this kid up on Twitter, you will only see the video where he's throwing 99 and you will not see anything where he's throwing anything less than that. So right. The reality versus the perception is entirely different. Now, if people want to go out there and they want to start broadcasting that this kid's pitching at 91.7 and he's having success, right? Then maybe other kids will see, like, oh, well,
there you go.
It's like the Aaron Nola thing the other day, right? Like, oh, his velocity's down, so he must be hurt. And it's like, no, he's out there like not at his best today because the mound sucks because it's raining, right? And he's just competing. He's doing what Robbins wants all of his guys to do. He's doing what's best for the team. He can't go back to the dugout after the first inning and be like, ah, I can't pitch today. All my, you know, my velocity's down 2 ticks. There's no footing. Sorry, I'm going home. No, you pitch for the Philadelphia Phillies. You figure it out. He figured it out for 6 innings. It's a great article on The Athletic where JT Realmuto breaks down the whole start. And he's like, man, that's just a lot of fun to see a guy go out there when, you know, the conditions are the way they are. And he just competes, right? Like, That's the part that like kind of gets lost in translation. You only see the peak.
Yeah. Right? Which is my help your team win where you are.
Right.
Help your team win where you are.
I think the tricky thing here is, okay, like let's talk about like competing and pitching, and let's talk about just throwing harder. Well, just throwing harder is something you can sell. You can sell a program. You can sell product. Just throw harder, right? But can you sell a program that has objective success, like a marker like miles per hour, that's like, I became X amount much of a better pitcher in 3 months, or I became X amount much of a better competitor? No, because it's this thing that you can't measure. It's not a tangible thing. So as long as we're living in a society we live in a capitalist country, where you can make money on arm velocity programs and you can't measure increases in pitchability and competitiveness, then it's just going to continue to be what it is. People are going to continue to sell velocity programs and velocity products, and people are going to continue to get frustrated that they can't sell as a private pitching instructor or pitching coach that, yeah, I make guys more competitive, or I teach guys how to pitch better than the next guy, right? I think that's the problem.
Well, I think all the people that can do the latter that you just said are coaching. They're coaching in schools.
Getting paid to do.
I'm not trying to knock people. I've tried to do the private thing myself. I didn't enjoy it because I wanted to be on a team. I wanted to be part of a team. That's what this is supposed to be.
Right. It's also really hard to be a good coach. And we're sitting here talking with two coaches, right? Like, me and Jeff, we could go read some books and we could teach some kids to throw harder. We could do it. Both of us could.
Yeah, you don't even need books. Just scroll Twitter.
Right. But if you put either of us in a bullpen right now and you said, all right, you are now in charge of this pitching staff at a high school varsity level, Jeff, how are we doing on teaching these guys how to pitch? I'm not doing particularly well. And that was my position growing up. Maybe in a year when I start learning how to coach.
Jeff, how would you do?
Where would you start, Jeff?
I think he's in 12U, 13U right now.
No, it's younger than that. It's
little league. 9U.
Yeah, it's little league. Yeah. I think the biggest thing with me is I just try to teach intent, like in terms of try to do this, focus on doing this correctly before you're maxing out. It's even like swinging too, you know. Yeah. We just had our first practice, get my second one actually in like 3 hours. And, you know, I mean, it's town league. So like we have a really wide range of like abilities and understanding. But I think the biggest thing is like, you know, you see guys swinging, like, you know, and especially at this age, they're not that strong yet. Get your elbow up, like get an actual load, like trying to explain those things to them. But I think once you get up to higher levels, and you're trying to train these guys, I mean, the problem is like the easy answer is velocity, because as you said, it's a tangible number. But I do think like you have guys throwing in bullpens and sessions, not maxing out, working more 80%, and trying to perfect grips, you know, learn how to throw a changeup. You can spin a little bit more, learn how to throw, whether it's a curveball or a slider or just a slurvy breaking ball at this point. Like, I think that's the stuff that I would probably try to focus on. And the markers I would look at would be, you know, depending upon what a guy threw like and what his strengths were. If a guy gets a lot of ground balls, probably looking at, you know, how many ground ball outs did he get? Like, you know, how efficient is he, you know, within his outings? And I think strikes would be big for me, especially at that level, is throwing strikes. I know guys are going to give up hits. And I know with my lower level guys, one of the things that I talk to them about, especially like young kids, is like swing the bat. Like, obviously don't swing at stuff over your head or if it bounces to home plate, but if it's around the plate, like learn how to hit, learn how to actually swing at pitches and do damage, because there's too many guys that are in, I saw it with my oldest son, that are in like lower levels, whether it's like, you know, we have like double A, triple A, and then majors for little league. But even in like double A, guys are sitting there and just trying to take walks, even fringy stuff that they could potentially hit. And I think it just creates a lot of like bad, you know, sort of traits and
bad habits as the game.
Yeah.
It's more,
yeah, I think it's that sort of stuff. So I'm probably not qualified with like a bigger thing. Like I take over a high school pitching program, but I think for me, like the biggest thing is just guys throwing strikes and executing. Now I'm also in Massachusetts. So if you threw 82 in Massachusetts, you're probably starting on the weekend for your high school. Like we're not seeing 88 mile per hour throwers all that frequently. There are some. There's always a handful of guys that are throwing hard, but it's separated from public high schools too. I mean,
I think y'all would be surprised to realize when you watch this level, it's actually the problem is throwing balls on purpose. Like how to command outside of the strike zone on purpose. That's actually the biggest learning curve for kids. It's actually the strongest thing that we're trying to focus on here, is to teach you how to throw pitches that appear to be strikes but aren't at the time of decision to swing. That is something that is very hard to teach them, because they've been drilled their whole life, throw strikes, throw strikes, throw strikes. Well, there comes a time when you can throw too many strikes. And teaching them to throw it out of the strike zone on purpose is actually harder than people think. I mean, because it's like they grew up with that throw strikes, and that's correct, 100% correct, throw strikes, but also know how to throw not a strike on purpose. And that's actually a really hard thing to teach. You'd be surprised. It's hard.
It's really funny that you bring that up. You know, one thing, and obviously Trevor Bauer's outlawed from professional baseball, so you know, maybe we get – what's the word for it? We get thrown off the air or something for even mentioning his name. He used to have, and I mean, he's got a really good mind. Unfortunately, it's a bad vehicle for really good information, but he once said, you know, like that's pitching for me is like, how do I get guys to swing out of the zone? Right. So he's like, I throw the majority of my pitches outside of the zone. Now it's funny that this kind of all connects, because this morning I'm looking at Brendan Donovan's, you know, season so far. I've got all of his data from every pitch he's seen this year. He's seen like 280 pitches. And we talked about it before, right? Like big leaguers command the baseball. 41% of the 280-ish pitches that he's seen have actually been in the strike zone. 59% of them have not been in the strike zone. And it's not because the guy on the mound can't throw strikes. It's exactly what you're talking about. When you get to that level, if you are just in the strike zone with every pitch, you're not getting out of the first inning.
No, no.
Yeah, the Brandon Marlowe is really good at hitting them outside the strike zone.
Yeah.
which is even harder to do.
Yeah. Anyway, Mike Robbins does not eat sandwiches. We're going to bring him on for a part two at some point because we can actually – well, we should get like a somebody who's actually a professional on here to talk about, you know, arm health and speculate on that. But this was a nice 80 minutes. Talk about a lot of different things.
It was a meaty episode, but I want to thank our friend Matt Pierce for coming back on again. And then Mike Robbins, Coach Robbins, thank you for coming on.
Yes. Thank you for having me. Thanks for the invite. I appreciate it.
And best of luck with your season. I hope this was informative for all the listeners out there. Thanks for tuning in.